Okay, my name is Mike Shane. I am an alcoholic. This says that we're going to do steps 2 and 3 now in about the next hour and 15 minutes. Step 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, is the turn from step 1. Step 1 is a very hopeless place. If you get a first step, if you really do what the big book says to do, which is concede to your innermost self that you have this, that is not a good place to be. As a matter of fact, I think it's probably the loneliest, scariest, most desolate place I've ever been in my life, which was when I finally, it hit me that I have this thing and that there's no way out for me. Not another marriage, not a job, not more money, not a new relationship, not a psychiatrist, not a treatment center. Nothing's going to fix me. Now I got to come to believe that there's this power greater than me, okay, that's going to solve my problem. Now, I don't know what AA is like down here. I've been to a few meetings, actually, around McDonough and Atlanta. But when I got sober, these people didn't hide the idea that this was a God-based program. They just didn't hide it. So when they were talking to a new person like me, and they enjoyed talking to me because I look so damn bad and I'm shaken and beat up, and especially when the bruises got yellow and big and stuff like that, they didn't hide the fact that this is a God-based program. And I remember looking at Frank and I said to him, I said, I can't go here. I can't go here. There is no God. I mean, there can't be a God. If there's a God, he ain't going to have nothing to do with me. I remember as a kid laying in my bed trying to pray to God to kill my father when he was drunk. Didn't happen. I saw so many things in the military and so many things on the streets that there couldn't be a God. I didn't believe in God. I did foxhole prayers, you know. I was raised a Lutheran, so we'd go to church. Then we'd come home, and my dad would get drunk and beat up on somebody. Made no sense to me. So I come in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have this thing called the gift of desperation. That's what's been coined around AA for many a year. The gift of desperation. I'm desperate enough to do what? Open my mind to something different, right? That's what we've all been talking about. So now all of a sudden, I'm sitting here and I'm having to read this thing called We Agnostics, and I'm not going to read your big book for you, all right? But let me tell you what it does say. It says, lay aside prejudice. What's prejudice? Prejudgment. That's all it is. Prejudgment. So I'm going to point at some of you, and you're going to tell me what some of your prejudgments about God is. Lindsay, what's one prejudgment you have?
Currently or?
Whenever.
Oh, that God, it's all hypocritical.
Judgmental.
Controlling. Vengeful.
If I believed in God, I'd be like one of those television preachers.
He only works sometimes.
That lady back there going like that.
That God is a man.
What about, is this a prejudgment? I've been in church my whole life, and I just really know there's a God. Is that a prejudgment?
Mm-hmm.
But yet I'm drinking and doing drugs, doing this and doing that. I got prejudgment, right? I have judgments about what the spiritual life is, and I've got to go and find something that's going to get between me and the next drink. Right? Isn't that what this is all about? So here's what they had me do. They had me sit down, and they constantly liked to remind me that my best thinking had gotten me here. This was my best shot at life, right? So all of a sudden, this idea of what God is, I have all of these. I had the very negative ideas, and the book discusses this, that we thought we had neatly and avoided this whole subject. You know, that's where I came from. Until I was confronted with exactly what the book talks about, and I love the way the big book nails it. A self-imposed crisis. We could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the fact that God is either everything or nothing. What's your choice to be? What that says to me, choice, is it takes the feelings out of it. Spirituality is not based on how I feel. I'm going to tell you something. Emotional maturity is about not living your life based on how you feel. When I came in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a reactor. That's what I did. I reacted to life, right? So if you threatened me, I reacted. If you gave me what I wanted, I was nice to you. Right? Emotional maturity is not living your life based on how you feel. Around York Street, Dave just brought it up just before this thing started, that I know Dave believes, is I was told when I was new, fuck your feelings. Okay? See, what is the idea of this sponsor? Well, I've got to believe that this person that I've asked to be my sponsor knows something that I don't know, right? So, lay my feelings aside. The book begs me throughout the second step is to lay my prejudices aside. Now, I'm here to tell you, sober as long as I am, here's my definition of God today. God is. That's it. God is not a man. God is not a woman. Thank God. Or I'd be dead. God is not human. We alcoholics want to put human attributes on God. Why? So we can control it. We are control freaks. Dave talked in the last session about how we want to control us by taking credit for working all these steps and keeping myself sober, and aren't I wonderful, right? Guy came up to me in between the meetings, and he goes, you know, yeah, by the way, if you talk to me, it's pretty much going to be out there for public record. Unless it's in the content of a fifth step, or you say, don't say anything, but I'm going to tell you that, because it's all of our experiences, okay? If you think that you're unique because you're black, white, woman, coke addict, alcoholic, if you think you're unique, you're not. We all suffer from the same stuff, right? So the big book says we must lay aside prejudice. How many of you have had this experience where you have written down what those prejudices are as you go through the steps? Two? Three? Four? I'm going to make a suggestion that the next time you go through the steps, or the next time you take someone through the steps, have them write out all of their prejudices about the spiritual realm and about God. Have them write it out. One of the biggest mistakes I have made in sobriety is thinking I know what the spiritual realm is all about. This is what it's supposed to look like. Okay? And then all of a sudden I do something totally away from what this thing is supposed to look like, and it works out just fine. And I love the way Dave talked about it, because I've had situations happen, and I talk about Bob Olson a lot, and the main reason I do is Bob and I have been best friends for 39 years. So I talk about him. He talks about me. But, I mean, we have had situations, and we've been 10-step buddies, and we talk on the phone a lot, and we finish each other's statements. It's like a marriage. I mean, I call him and I go, "Hey, Bob, this is what," he goes, "Yeah, I already know, do this," you know. And I do the same thing with him. And I have had situations since I've been sober in the spiritual realm where I know I'm not supposed to go do this, right? Well, I'm going to go do it. Usually that has to do with the opposite sex, but, you know. And somehow, way, shape, or form, sometimes it has, you see 2, 3, 4 years down the road, that's exactly the way I was supposed to go. Okay, so I don't know. So let me make a suggestion about step two, coming to believe that there's this power greater than me, is to have yourself or somebody else write out what their prejudices are. And then do what the book says. The big book says, lay them aside. We don't attack them. We don't do anything with them. We just lay them aside. We put them off here to the side. All right? I think that the biggest influence on coming to believe in a power greater than myself is you. And that is this. If I'm truly alcoholic, down to my core, and I've got the gift of desperation, and I'm presented the solution by somebody who radiates a different life than I do, what's my choice? What's your choice? What are you going to do? Mama didn't raise dummies in this group, trust me. We're going to pick it up, right? Why do you think it is that some people who really and truly have a first step cannot move on to this, to step two? Why do you think that is? Anybody?
Prejudice.
Besides prejudice.
Fear. Fear.
Fear. It's a good one. What about the idea of giving up control? We do not want to give up control. So, my step two was this. I looked at certain people, and I said, "You don't drink anymore, you don't want to drink, and you state that your sobriety is based on a power greater than yourself that you choose to call God, so therefore, I'm willing to do that. But I have to be willing to do the rest of the work." And I said that to Frank. I said, "I don't think I can do this." And he said, "You know, Mike, there's a couple of things that you need to realize about Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is, if you're in here, we don't drink. Right? And secondly, you do find a God. You're going to find a God here. So you might as well find one that you sort of like hanging out with." I'll never forget that. Because I'm not going to spend time in prayer meditation with something I think's going to thump me. Right? So the whole idea of the second step is about changing my mind. Now let's talk about, I talked about it being new, but before I ask Dave's side of it, how about after we've been sober for a while? Do you think we can get trapped in a mind? You guys say the set-aside prayer, you know, all the time. And I love this prayer. I've used it for many, many years. And a different version of this also. Because one of the biggest traps in being sober for a period of time is we think we know what we've got. We don't think there's anything new out here. Right? So the whole idea of opening my mind is a concept that's very foreign to alcoholics. Because we need to be in control. We absolutely, positively need to be in control. And on the back of this thing, again, that's exactly what Thibaut talks about. That's it for now. We'll do step three. We got to do step three yet.
My name is Dave, recovered alcoholic. So I'm at this place and spiritual basis of life or else, and I'm starting to consider, well, how do I get there in the first place if I can't pull it off? And the first thing that step two is going to do in We Agnostics is look at what it is I don't believe. Why is it that when I start considering a spiritual basis of life, I start doing this with it, right? Where's that coming from? And it uses these statements about evade, ignore, honest doubt, inadequate, impressed upon. Okay? I think that most of this room is familiar with the concept of turning statements into questions. Okay? And every time I've turned myself into step two, and I roll through that, I come to a bunch of external ideas that are placed upon these statements. What is it about God I've been evading? What is it about God that I've ignored? What is it about God or spiritual basis of life that I honestly doubt? I doubt that He gives a shit. How many times has that come up? Right? And oftentimes, especially in the beginning of repetitive step twos, it came from ideas about God that were impressed upon me. First, religion, and I'm not down in religion. I'm just telling you where it came from. Okay, and then I got some sitting around in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. That sounded really good because the one that I heard and we talked about fuck your feelings. Boy, after a little while in AA, I thought, because I heard it so much, I thought, boy, if it feels good, it's God, and if it feels bad, it's not. And boy, that sounds great.
Oh, no.
You know what that does? You're not going to do 11 steps anymore, I promise. Because that feels like crap. It just keeps piling up because you don't do the corrective measures, right? So it keeps piling up. Well, I'm not going to do 10 steps either because I don't want anybody making me feel bad because I'm in resentment, fear, dishonesty, and selfishness. I don't want anybody pulling my covers. You know? I'm not going to do 4 steps. I don't want to write. That takes a lot of work and doesn't feel good either. And where am I at? Right? I'm right back. I'm just right back. I'm in step 0, in effect. Right? Doing everything in AA but AA.
Yeah.
And so there's all this stuff, right? And so it starts begging the question, where did I get it? It's external, right? And who gave it to me? A book, a church, an individual. All this is important because where are we supposed to look for this coming to believe in a power greater than myself that's going to restore us to sanity? Down deep inside. And as I shared last night, I was born in a church that was grooming me to be a missionary. I mean, I went to seminary drunk. Right? In that church, you start going to seminary as soon as you hit high school. I stopped actually going on Sunday, but because I'm a masochist, I show up for seminary. Right? Because I think there's something in the scriptures. It's just like, does this sound familiar? It's the fellowship I don't like. You know? Does that sound familiar? I like the book. It's the fellowship I don't like. No. But, so it's, you know, I have all this input come from outside sources. And it just created this obstacle of never getting an opportunity to ask, what does God honestly mean to me? Which is a consideration later on in We Agnostics. not too far later on, it's after the laying aside that Mike talked about. Whatever your spiritual term is, and the book actually says to look at the spiritual terms in the book and ask yourself what they honestly mean to you. And I've been given that exercise as an actual written exercise. Not add any poetic license to it, pen, paper, and just write what comes in through intuitive thought. As a exercise to start developing, being able to listen, just be able to listen to intuitive thought, which was a foreign concept to me for the first 5-6 years of sobriety. I thought that was for other people. I thought that was for saints in AA. I thought that other people could do that in AA, outside of AA. I just didn't think that was something that... I didn't think that was the kind of personal relationship God and I had. I thought I was just going to have to continue to muddle through the dark and just kind of get lucky once in a while, you know? And you know, in that laying aside, Bill makes a really important disclaimer that we aren't to get wrapped up in fully defining or comprehending. But that doesn't mean we throw the baby out with the bathwater. He's given us, look, this isn't about fully understanding God, because if I could fully understand God, I would be God. Okay? That's the premise. Right? But I have to start somewhere. And it doesn't matter how limited, and it doesn't matter how inadequate. I may think it is, you may think it is, or anybody else. But I got to start somewhere. I got to start somewhere on some track and some sort of define, some sort of box. And if you were as spiritually deficient as I was when I got here, any box that God gives me is plenty of room. I'm not going to be pushing the sides of the walls of that box anytime soon. Okay? Where did it come from? And when I sponsor people that come in with no God, atheist, those questions in the beginning of We Agnostics are just as relevant, because to a person, their basis for the atheism is, again, an external source. It's an external source. I'm not trying to convince them of anything, but they have to at least acknowledge that all that is coming from some sort of external source. I found that I was equating religion with God. You throw out one, you throw out both. You walk away from one, you walk away from both. So when I walked away from the religion, I walked away from God. And that is not the truth. I also had a strong prejudice, because that can be good, it can be bad. I had a strong prejudice about my material life will reflect my faith. And while that didn't materialize by being a good LDS boy, now I'm serious and I'm Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm 10 years sober and I'm doing everything that God wants me to do and helping bringing his alcoholic kids to God and all this other stuff. And I'm taking a dive materially and financially and I'm going, well, where's mine, God? I'm your boy down here doing all this work. You mind showing up once in a while and throw me a bone once in a while? You know, where was that all wrapped up in? This idea that I picked up somewhere along the way outside said, your material life will reflect your faith, your relationship with God. And I can tell you, when I was in Utah cutting my teeth, 12-stepping, sponsoring guys, I was holding a garage sale. My car got repoed. And I sponsored a bunch of guys at this recovery house. And I'd elevated myself above the group. I'd elevated myself above the sponsor. I was too prideful to say what was happening. And it was falling. It was just imploding. And a couple guys showed up. I live way on the south end of Salt Lake City. These guys are way up in downtown. And these guys show up and go, my stuff's all on the lawn. You got a little yard sale sign and everything. And where's your car? It's a little repoed. Where are you going? Back to California. And, you know, oh, that's a bummer. I go, why? I go, what's going on? He goes, well, we were just coming down here to see if you had sponsors. And I'm going, what do I possibly have that you could possibly want? And out of the mouths of babes. They see it. They don't give a shit about none of that. Right? So what does God honestly mean to me? The book says that the answer to that question is where the first conscious relation occurs. And I think that's really important. Because if it doesn't occur there, in step two, if this willingness to turn, like Mike said, towards a relationship with God and no longer taking for granted the God that's at my back, looking at him and like looking at it from the rearview mirror, and start entering into a relationship with God that has some spiritual foresight, where God's out in front of me, then what kind of, at least I'm just talking from my own experience and people I've helped. What kind of faith can I really have in taking a third step? If some sort of relation or willingness to believe in a relationship hasn't already been established, some sort of trust. Okay, what good is asking God to remove my anger or remove my fear and direct my attention to what He had me be? What kind of trust can I really have in that if some sort of relationship hasn't been already developed, or at least a willingness to have a relationship already become developed? Asking God for a right ideal, taking a 7-step prayer, all the prayers that are involved in the 9th step, 10 and 11. If a conscious relationship with God isn't established until 11, doesn't it brings into question, at least in my mind, all the other prayers I'm making? I don't have a lot of confidence behind that. I don't have a lot of God confidence behind that. But if it's true what the book says, and I believe it is, that the first conscious relationship starts with a willingness to believe in what God honestly means to me, and asking, after being willing to say, lay aside all that stuff that's external, and going down and saying, God, what do you honestly mean to me? Whatever comes. And I encourage too, especially if you've been around a while, to look at the spiritual terms in the book, the capitalized ones, put them on a paper like this, and on the other side, in meditation, prayer, the pen, God, what is you as universal mind honestly mean to me? What does you as love, infinite love, power and love mean to me? There's all kinds of capitalized terms, right? And I watch what comes off my pen, stuff I couldn't come up with on my best day. Answers to terms that I wouldn't even consider. I still, when I hear Czar of the Heavens, it makes my head. It's like this, you know? But I get answers from that if I ask, and am I willing to trust the answer I receive? And then the agnostic seems to challenge again and again some more prejudices, and do I have them? And if I have them, am I going to continue to hold on to these prejudices and disregard this first conscious relation that I'm willing to establish now? Is holding on to this more important than moving forward with this conscious relation that's now becoming established? This is all going towards what I was taught to be the 2nd step prayer. You know, on page 59. Half measures avail us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We ask His protection and care with complete abandon. Okay? Half measures on the turn. Right? God wants me to make a full 180 degree turn to seek Him. There's really interesting terms in this Whig Gnostics thing. Approach, contact, seek, approach, contact, relate, access, power, peace, happiness, sense of direction. See, feel, use, direct, right? And entering into this first conscious relation. See, there's no there's no requirement for this thing that came between me and alcohol, this spiritual experience, but the spiritual awakening, this conscious contact, this relationship with God is very clear. The book is very clear. This requires something. This is conditional. It requires seeking. It requires seeking. And God is all inclusive. I exclude myself by not seeking. It's just like in AA. If I'm not involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's not your fault. I'm talking about the program. I exclude myself from that. It's not your fault. I exclude myself. Okay? And in seeking God is no different. I exclude myself. And in this book, this program talks about a personal relationship with God. What leg do I have to stand on to take any other position? Nothing else has worked. Okay, a personal relationship with God that I can interact with. To me, a God that I can't have a personal relationship with might as well be no God. A God that I can't access might as well be no God. Isn't that where we get to with bedevilments? Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did, and at some point becomes our ideas again. And when it becomes our ideas again, in all practicality, when I'm playing God, when I am the Alpha and the Omega, am I not in all practicality living as if there is no God? I can sit there and blow smoke up my butt in the mirror and say, oh, I'm an agnostic, I'm just struggling with my belief about God. But the truth is I'm living as if there is no God because I'm God. And that's why the reworking of this program is so, to me, is so vital, because that just rebuilds the spirituality, the ego, whatever you want to call it. It rebuilds and will lead me to believe that I now need to take over. And where does that usually start? Stuff that Mike talks about, that this feeling, starting to define what a spiritual basis of life is supposed to look like, what it's supposed to feel like, what it's supposed to be like. You know what? It's right at that moment where I begin to short-circuit it. And coming to this place of going, God is. God is. And trying to stay there. That's hard. It's hard. That's all I have.
Great. Any questions? Anybody want to share anything?
Yeah, my name's Roger Marpollock.
Roger.
And there's something, and the wording in the second step kind of confronts me with a personal conflict. It's like there's a city in Georgia, and there's a saying goes around, is it all Benny or all Danny? And well, I call it all of them, but no matter what, it's still the same physical place in the state of Georgia. But this whole thing about, turn my will and my life, can't believe the power of God in myself. I'm jumping the first step. Made a decision to turn our will and life, care of God as we understood Him. And then, for me, it's like, well, hell, we've been talking about this right now. It's like all the stuff that, all the stuff I understood about God or thought I understood about God, or all the stuff that didn't work about the way I thought about God, or all the stuff that everybody else said about God. So this whole thing about, as I understood Him, well, that never freaking worked. So, for me, it's got to be, I'm going to change the book to say, as setting aside anything that I thought I freaking knew about what God was. I had to get kind of, maybe just semantics, but I had to get past that to be able to get to the point where, I can move forward this now, because I'm going to set aside all that stuff that I thought I knew about what God was or is or what He isn't. Anyway, that's what I had to say.
Thanks.
I just went through step two, and I brought a bunch of axes to grind with God, and I've been holding on to them for a few years. And on the back side of that, right what you were talking about, something that I had never seen before personally was that this turning the will and life over the care of God as I understood Him. Also, the other side of the equation is that I have to be willing to turn my will and life over the care of God as I still don't understand Him. And be willing to be open to be shown. this is the first time I came to step two wide open to saying, you show me this kind of thing. Because I felt like I was not on good footing with my relationship with God and doubting a lot. And I said, you show me this kind of thing. Because I don't understand.
Okay. I think the M&Ms are out, too.
Boy, that's a higher power, isn't it? Did you see all that?
Putting candy out of an AA meeting is sort of like feeding the piranha, you know?
It's like, we don't even matter at this point.
It's like, here we go. Skittles or M&Ms? Skittles are, oh, God, Skittles are out, too. God, I got to get my hands on some of those. All right, let's get back to the realities of what we're doing here. So,
the M&M connection.
I want Skittles. So anyway, yeah, I'm doing sugar this weekend. Dear God. So if I go on rants, I can blame it on the Skittles, right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So there seems to be two common denominators with step two, because we're going to move on to step three. One is we got to get hurt, don't we? We got to get damaged. We got to get hurt. We got to hit a bottom, right? I can't bring myself to a bottom. Life brings me to a bottom. You want to know what your life really looks like? You really want to know? It's right in front of your nose. It's right here, right now. No matter what you think is going on, look at your life the way it is. That's the fact. Because alcoholics are the funniest people in the world, as far as I'm concerned, because we all run around and think we're better than everybody else. Right? Or, what's the other side of the coin? We're worse. We're a piece of crap. Right? I got to tell you right here, right now, I'm setting you up for the fourth step, but it's both, that's the double-edged sword of the ego. The double-edged sword of the ego is I'm better or I'm worse. So when I walk around, and I hear people doing this all the time in AA, oh, my real problem is I don't think I'm good enough and I don't deserve it. Bullshit. The reason you don't think you're good enough is because you think you're pretty hot shit and you should be able to figure this all out. That's why. Right? So now the third step's going to line me up with what my real issue is. Then it's going to say, you're going to turn your will, how I think, my life, everything else, over to the care of this God. But I'm here to tell you that the third step is only a decision to do the rest of the work. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. The old timers back in the 30s and early 40s, some of them have told me this, that they called 4 through 9 the surrender steps. That's where I find God. And Frank actually said to me when I told him I can't do this, and then we talked about it, and I was such a chicken shit, I said, yeah, I'll do this, and because I had no other choice, right? He said, you're going to find a God somewhere between now and the time you are done with the ninth step. So the third step in this book sets us up for, one, inventory, because... Remember at the end of the third step, for those of you that have been around, what does it say? You think you're all done with the third step, and then it goes, next! We launch out on a course of vigorous action, right? I didn't get a break, all right? So, I'd like you, if you have a book, turn to page 60. Down here it says, being convinced we're at step three, which is that we decided. It's a decision. Is that based on feeling?
Nope.
To turn our will and life over to the care of God as we understood Him, just what do we mean by that and just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Does it say my life? It says any life. What does that mean? Hmm?
basic human condition of everybody.
Exactly. So I would sit there and I would look at people like Ted Turner, and well, he's really successful. He seems like he's self-will run riot, right? Is he really happy? I don't know. I don't even know if he's self-will run riot. I really don't know. I got to play golf with this guy who was probably back in the 80s one of the most powerful back then it was multi-millionaires, not multi-billionaires. And he invited me out to his country club where, like, there's three groups on the whole course, you know. And we're out there riding around in the cart. And I just said to him, I said, I got to ask you. I said, how do you do this? I mean, you have not just success in business, but you have success in life, and your kids love you, and your wife seems to love you, and all of this stuff. And he goes, this guy, not a guy in the program. And he goes, you know what I do? I said, what? He said, every morning I get up and I pray to God. And I ask him to help me. And then I go through every decision that I think I have to make that day, and I ask, is this going to affect? Who's this going to affect? And how's it going to affect? And I'm sitting there with my eyes about this wide open. He doesn't need a step number to do the right thing. Right? Any life based on self-will. And it's going to go on to explain what self-will is. And if you understand what self-will is, you're going to start to see that you can never be happy in self-will. And I don't care if you're alcoholic. I don't care if you're Bill Gates. All right? On that basis, okay, so they're talking about self-will. On that basis, we're almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Drunks don't get in trouble when they got bad motives. Drunks get in trouble when they got good motives. Right? I don't know a drunk that's not willing to pay the price. I've done stuff that I know is a bad motive, and I get caught, or I, you know, whatever happens, I'm willing to pay the price. Here's where I get whiny, is when I go into something with all good intentions, right? Good motives. Let me tell you one that's real prevalent amongst the work world nowadays. I'm just trying to put food on the table for my family. But so many of these people are just running people over like you can't believe it, right? But then what ends up happening? They don't get what they want, right? But my motives are just great. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show. Now, what's wrong with that statement in the alcoholic's mind? Whose job is it to run the whole show? The director. I'm not the director. I'm the actor. The director tells me where to stand, how to dress, how to deliver the line, how to do this, how to do that, right? But no, I'm better than all of you. I know better than all of you. I'm sure I'm the only person in this room that has gone into a situation and not tried to control it, right? We all do. All right, so each person's like the actor who wants to run the whole show is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put. I love this. If only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. So we are so arrogant as to believe that if Dave will do it my way, I'm going to be happy, and so's he. Right? Dave's just going to be a happy guy. That's why I don't go out in AA and pound on people. And this is the right way to do it. I just don't do it anymore. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work. Big Frank used to be able to do it sometimes effectively. I saw Big Frank. I asked him to speak at a meeting that 200 people went to, and half of them got up and left. And he finally sat there with me one day. He says, "What I do doesn't work." And I said, "Why is that?" He says, "Because this is about attraction. This isn't about promotion. Because you think you have the answer out of the big book of AA, and you go out into your community out there, and you go to these other meetings, and they're talking about the problem of the day or whatever. I just don't choose to go to them. But all I can do is speak my own truth. And who's attracted to it is going to come up and talk to me. And half the people aren't going to like me. Because I'm going to tell you something that I have really come to believe, and that is most people in AA don't want to get well. They really don't. They enjoy staying sick. Have you ever heard this? "Oh, I did that. I'm just a drunk. I'm just an alkie." They want to stay sick. They really and truly do. So now, life would be wonderful, and trying to make these arrangements, our actor may be sometimes quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he's more likely to have varied traits. Most of us try to get by the nice guy way. And if we can't get by the nice guy way, then we'll use the hammer. We'll bring the hammer out if we can. Okay? I lived my life in drinking through intimidation. I was a big, tough guy, I thought. I mean, I was. Physically, I was somebody to handle. And I used it. I used it big time. When I see tough guys today, I know how scared they really are. So they don't scare me too much. What usually happens is show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. Next, he decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious as the case may be. See, the reason I'm reading out of the book is because, guess what, folks? I can't say it no better than this. I really can't. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people, "Dave, you're more to blame." He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. Now, I talk to my sponsees about barometers. There's barometers if you know you're living a spiritual way of life, and there's barometers if you're heading back to a drink in the spiritual realm. There really and truly are. If I am angry, indignant, and self-pitying, I am in self-will. Period. End of story. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants, and do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not even in his best moments a producer of confusion rather than harmony? One of my heroes in AA meditates, and I do now, about what kind of harmony am I into? What's the spiritual rhythm of what I'm walking into, and can I bring something to it? Right? A drunk in his cups is nothing but pure, unadulterated confusion. I'm going to cut over here to the second paragraph of 62 because of time. We got plenty of time, but I want to get Dave's input. Here's the answer to all of this. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. So selfishness is the root of my problem. I hear a lot in AA about I'm fear-driven alcoholic. Have you ever heard that? Well, that's because you're a selfish son of a bitch. Because that's where all of my fear comes from. It comes from I'm not going to get what I want, or I'm going to lose what I got. And I am convinced that I must have it or must keep it. Right? Why? Because drunks... Here I go. Skittles. Skittles too. I want you to think about this. Drunks live to feel secure. Sober. Why is romance and finance the two biggest problems with alkies?
They threaten our security.
Exactly.
Pink and green.
That's what I must have to be secure. I must have this relationship. It must be this way. I must make this amount of money. I must do this. Did you see that?
He's going to get wound up now, too.
I love those things. Yeah, you're going to get
going. I thought the hammer was going to come out.
It's threatening the security of Skittles.
I got my boys outside. I got my crew. No, we live for security. Is there anybody in here that doesn't believe that? When I'm sober, I still to this day live for security. I'm a guy who came off the streets, right? And I today have a bank account. I have a savings account. And when that savings account gets below a certain number... I'm in real estate, so I don't get paid unless deals close. I don't get a paycheck, right? If that savings account gets below a certain number, I get scared, don't I? Because why? Because I believe money's security. One of the things that was said last night, and I'm going to tell you that when we get into four-step, I'm going to talk about it, is that we write belief system inventory. Because my belief systems are what dictates how I act. All right, I can sit around and write all the inventory in the world, and I can be pissed off at Dave today and Brandon tomorrow and Lindsay the next day, you know, and Red the next day. And every single time, it's always about the same exact thing, just the names change, right? But I'm writing inventory. Why is that? Because I got a belief system I got to attack so that it all goes away. Oh, there we go, Skittles. All right, so our troubles we think are basically of our own making. What a promise. That is actually one of the most positive promises in the big book. Because if they were not of my own making, if I was some kind of leaf floating down a river that was just subject to the currents, guess what? Nothing's ever going to change, right? They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything. You think that's sort of important? You think that Bill sort of thought this next thing is sort of important? Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. Now, the alcoholic mind goes, well, I better get going in this. Next sentence says what?
God
makes it possible. All right? And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral, as Dave talked about, many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. Why? Because it didn't work. Here comes this decision-making again, and this is my third step. This is Mike Shane's third step, is this next sentence. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God's going to be our director. That's it. That's my third step, decision. There's nothing else left to be said, is there? He is the principal, we are his agents. He is the father, we are his children. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. When we sincerely took such a position, God is God, I'm the drunk. That's the position. All sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Now that can be a discussion of a whole couple hours, right there. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. I love the way he says that. Little plans. Our plans are little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind. That's a promise. All right? Here's one of my favorite promises in the Big Book. As we discovered we could face life successfully. How many days did you ever get up and go, oh, God, man, it's just going to turn to shit in a handbasket. I know it is. The alcoholic mind goes to the negative all the time. If my head gets caught in the future, it's going to be a bad ending. Trust me. All right? That's why I work. And we'll get to this when we talk about 10th step. My 10th and 11th step is all about staying in the here and now. That's all it's about. Stay right here. Stay right now. As we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We are reborn at this point. And then the real work gets to begin. Third step is a decision to do the rest of the steps. And that's what I sign up for in here. I've got all this information, right? Step one, I'm screwed. I'm going to get drunk. I'm dead. I'm dead meat. Step two, maybe there's something out there that will help me out. We'll see. Step three is I'm willing to try this. But I'm willing to go to any lengths to do this deal. I'm willing to dig in. Now, I got to be honest with you, my first time through the steps, I didn't know if I was willing to go to any lengths. I said I was because it sounded good, and I was afraid of Frank. But the truth was, is I didn't know. I really didn't know. And if you get caught up in what you think those links are going to be, it's going to stop you. The whole trick of going through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is to be on the step you're on with no expectation. So if you're writing inventory, don't be thinking about 9. If you're writing inventory, don't be thinking writing it so that the person listening to your fifth step thinks you're a little cooler than you really are. Who in here hasn't done that? Hasn't? Come on. I mean, give me a break. The whole idea of this step work is about staying in the here and now and doing it in the here and now. I'm here to tell you, and I will tell you probably 20 times before this conference is over, you do not have anything that's past right this millisecond. You do not have it. It is not important if my dog is eating at my house today. It is not important if I go home to this deal that I was talking with people coming down here from the airport with Brandon. None of that means anything. All I have is what's here right now. This is where God works, right here. And this is where I need to stay. Because if I get into the future, it's a very dangerous place. Jack McKernan used to say, what goes on up here is for entertainment purposes only. My reality does not live here unless I'm here. That's all it is. And I'll talk a lot more about that later.
So, thanks, Mike. Does anything else need to be covered?
Me more Skittles. I'll have something to say.
So, it talks about this first requirement. and I think there's five, according to the book. It just doesn't use the word requirement. And the first one, of course, was that you be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. And I think when you're new and you're going through this the first time, that's pretty obvious. You're here, right? Best thinking got you here. You're here. It's pretty obvious. Everything's in shambles, right? And even if you're long, like, young coming in like I was, and you don't have a lot of external shambles, well, what got me here at 24 years old, 23 years old, already dying from alcoholism when somebody else got here at 50? Does it matter? Doesn't matter. Alcohol is alcohol. You got here when God gets you here, right? But we've been talking a lot about the bedevilments, and whether you do them verbally or written. I was taught to do them written later on, because I got into thinking that, well, the self-will I'm involved in now isn't as bad as it was when I was new. The dishonesty I'm involved in now isn't as bad as it was, so I'm doing pretty good, you know. But the truth is that I don't know how much self-will, I don't know how much selfishness, self-centeredness, how much fear and self-pity it takes to take me back to the next drink. I have no measurement. I don't know where that line is. Now, I go to meetings and people claim to know where that line is when they have to start going to God because they've been in selfishness. I don't know what that line is. I have zero clue. Again, that goes back to propping up a defense that I don't have. So I write bedevilments now. What's the trouble? Don C. talked about doing the back side of that in step two and asking, what is God's idea? What do you think that might look like? Putting that down. You know what that creates? A whole bunch more agnosticism, because the stuff comes off my pen that I can come up with on my best day, and it doesn't matter where I'm at in the steps. But it does put some teeth into this decision about God. Either is or he isn't. He's everything or he's nothing. Because if he's not everything, or at least he's not enough to come up to this idea that he has for my life, what's the point? And what I see when I come to the third step is that my bedevilment list in one becomes my agnosticism list in two, becomes my list of where my life has failed because of self-will in three. And so it's an exercise, and again, whether you do it verbal or whether you do it written, doesn't make much difference. The fact that you do it, you really have some hardcore evidence right in front of you that says, yes. Okay, and it carries through the first three steps. And so these other requirements, and Mike read them. The second one, it's in that second paragraph, says, so our troubles we think are basically our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. That's a requirement. Am I convinced of that? Am I really convinced that selfishness, right? That I must be rid of it. Not remove, not deal with, not cope with, not work on. And there is a definition of removal that is not disappear. And I don't know if this is what Bill meant or not. But at least in my experience, removal means from moved here, remove it over there. Which means it can be removed back over here. Right? How much does it need to be moved out of the way? Just enough for God, the sunlight of the Spirit to come into me and keep me walking the path that he wants me to walk, even if it's just one step at a time. It would be great to be so filled with God that I would just have no question. I just walk courageously on through the rest of my life and just take the world by the tail and just... But that's not seems doesn't seem to be my experience. It seems like I get just enough courage to put one foot in front of the other. I'd like to think that the more I do this, the further I get away from the spiritual malady. And it seems like the more I do this, the heavier it is on my heels. Okay? So, am I convinced of that? Am I convinced that, here's number three, we must or it kills us. Does it say anything about selfishness and booze? By itself. We talked about this last night. There are plenty of people that, if you've been around a while, know, took their own life, an untreated alcoholism, stone cold sober. Okay? Am I convinced that selfishness is a drink? Right underneath that is a drink. Am I really convinced of that? Am I convinced that self just can take me out of here and doesn't need booze? Am I really convinced of that? Number four. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. Do I? Or do I think I'm now qualified because I'm not drinking anymore? I now have the power of myself to take care of selfishness and self-centeredness. An alcoholic that says that to himself in the mirror to me is in a greater state of insanity than thinking he can control his drinking. Alcohol was just but a symptom. We're talking about causing conditions. We're talking about a root. You couldn't even stop the rain from raining down on you, the rain of alcohol coming down on you, which is just a symptom. But now that you're sober, you're going to uproot the whole tree that's getting rained on and fix it? It's crazy. And to attack selfishness and self-centeredness with more self-will run riot to fix it, you're feeding the monster that's killing you. But am I convinced of that? Am I really convinced of that? Okay. And the decision is the decision. It's about three concepts. It's one concept, three perspectives on this relationship with God. It doesn't say pick one or the other. It says the decision is about all three. Way back in step two, we agnostics, after we asked what God honestly meant to us, it said something really interesting. It says, after we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach, after we did this thing about God, what do you honestly, spiritual terms, what does this honestness mean to me? I get over here, is it still out of reach? Probably not if I've been following the deal, if I'm looking at my own life and what it's been like running it on self-will. Maybe it's not so out of reach anymore. What leg do I have to stand on, really? Right? Do I really have any kind of confidence in saying, no, I'm going to go do this third alternative? Has it ever worked before? It said that most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. Worked for them? Am I willing to believe it worked for me? Isn't that one of the three considerations that's mentioned in the preface? At the end of the preface in the book says, let's talk about personal stories. It says, ask three questions. Did this happen to me? Have I felt like this? Do I believe this program can work for me too? Oh, well, that's just the personal stories. Well, don't forget that the entire book is described as a story, which includes the first portion. So when I look at this, do I believe that can happen for me too? Number five. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. That can be up in my head. But if I have followed through with these instructions, I've looked at my bedevilments, I've looked at my manageability, I've looked at playing God, self-will run riot, relying on my own ideas. I've seen myself play God. Am I convinced that that's got to come to an end? That I can't make it happen? These third step promises that some people call them. I was working with somebody one time, and we were going through it. He says, those aren't promises. That's a contract. It's conditional. Right? And the conditions were read. When we sincerely took such a position, what position? That I am going to decide into these relationships with God. I'm going to engage in this. Okay, I'm willing to do that. We had a new employer, being all powerful. He provided what we needed. If there's the contract, there's the terms and conditions, there's the fine print, right? If we kept close to him and performed his work well. What work? It's like Mike said, it's not a mystery. I was actually in a big book study. We're talking about this, the mystery of this program. What mystery? What work? Oh, I don't even know what God's will for me is. Go read step 12 on the wall and you'll figure it out. All right? I mean, let's just start there. All right? Jesus is the work. You do the work of where you're at. Perform His work well. What are we doing right now? Trying to get a bunch of stuff that's out of the way that we, so this personal relationship with God can become stronger, closer, more effective, so we can see, feel, direct, and use it. Access. And I think it's good to talk about the prayer a little bit. God, I offer myself to Thee, to build with me, to do with me as Thou wilt. That's a blank check. And this is my opinion, it's not in the book. It's, in effect, it's giving back the gift that God gave us, which is free will. And am I willing to do that and say, you know what, You gave this gift to me, and I don't do nothing but self-destroy with it and hurt everybody else around me with it. I don't do the right things with it more times than not. Here, you can have it back. You guide me. You show me. You direct me. I don't want it anymore. Okay? And am I willing to surrender the greatest gift that God ever gave every man and woman, that is free will, and say, I'm not doing the right things with it. I don't have the power, unless you're directing me, to do the right things with it. You just run the show. And that means that I don't, once I make this decision, that He doesn't need any more, you know, like any new blueprints from me on how we ought to alter the thing, right? I gotta trust it. And I love what what Mike said about, which ties into, we found it, we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to Him. I have no idea what that looks like. But I know what I know what not abandoning utterly looks like. Because it starts showing up in the action steps, right? Like when I balk, right? I take time, I take a break in between my third and my fourth step. Why am I doing that? The book doesn't say to do that. It doesn't say to take a breather. It says launch. But why am I balking? There's something about this in between that I'm going, well, I'm willing to abandon utterly, just not utterly that. Or I get into the inventory, and this is why we abandon ourselves, that's protection care with complete abandon. It seems counterintuitive. All I'm trying to do is get a spiritual awakening, but the book is asking me prior to doing that for asking protection care with complete abandon. And I think that anybody that's walked this path trying to seek a spiritual awakening will find that the spiritual Maui, the ego, will find all kinds of ways to knock you off the path on each and every step. Each and every step. You know? And so you'll find that. You'll be in the inventory and you'll get something off, comes off your pen, and you're like, screw that. God's honest truth. 18, 19 years, both years, I try to do the steps once a year. But years 18 and 19, I couldn't finish my steps. I could not finish my steps. I just threw it. Next year. I'm not there this year. But that's where I was at. All right? Why? Maybe I really wasn't willing to abandon utterly. I came across something that was more important than abandoning utterly, in my mind. But that's all I have. Thanks.
Thanks. You know, I just want to say this, and I don't like to fill in time. I know this is supposed to go to 12:15. I just hate it when speakers fill in time. What?
I was just saying, we actually are 15 minutes ahead of schedule because we came back 15 minutes.
Oh, good. Early, so good, so we can get out of here.
You've done it.
But, so we did. I did it right and didn't even know it. See?
See the, guided.
See how that is? See how that worked? I just want to talk about what Dave talked about just for a minute. One of the things I point out to the people I go through the steps with is the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to Thee to build with me and to do with me as You want. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Remove my difficulties. Why all these things? Not for me. It's all so that I can help others. I give up my rights. Pritz used to talk about that all the time. I wasted my rights. I give up my rights to you, God, to take me and to do with me as I would like you to do. Now, I will tell you that if I would have gotten everything that I wanted when I was newly sober, what I thought a great life would be, I'd be dead by now, but I'd also have shortchanged myself. But does my life today look exactly like I would love it to be? No, not at all. But I have given up those rights. So I'm sitting here in Georgia on a beautiful day with a whole bunch of really cool people who are here to enlarge your spiritual condition, which is what I'm all about. I don't think it gets much better than this, does it? I'm done. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.